on the panel today, but yet to join us, Kaz Carter and Steve McCabe. Crimes in New Zealand get more exotic even as the crime rate goes down. Why is that? Men's only clubs. Is there anything wrong with them? What sorts of cats are friendliest? The answer to that may surprise you. And the huge numbers of consultants in government. Why do we need them all? Susan Baldacci is here, talking about what the world's talking about. How are you, Susan?
I'm good, Jim, thank you. Not so good is John McAfee, our famous billionaire on the run.
Now, what's the latest with him?
Well, the latest is he, sort of taking a page out of Julian Assange's book, is seeking asylum now in Guatemala.
Oh, did he get out of Belize or wherever he was?
See, he used a body double who was traveling on a North Korean passport.
No.
The body double got arrested. And he escaped somehow, got across the border, staying at a luxury resort in Guatemala.
He found a body double.
Yeah.
In this tiny place.
Yeah, he found a body double. So anyway, he's not shy about it. He's got his own blog. He's keeping everyone up to date on, as you do on your blog, on the comings and goings of life on the run. And
I saw a photo of him online of him kissing his fiancée, who appears to be about 50 years younger.
She's 20. Yeah,
she's 20.
She is. And he's going to hold a news conference on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, well, I guess Wednesday today would be Wednesday, or tomorrow will be Wednesday in that part of the world. So should be tomorrow to sort of, keep us all up to date on what's going on.
And lest we forget why he's been on the lam, it's because he's a person of interest.
He's a person of interest in a murder of his next door neighbor in Belize. So,
Steve McCabe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The exotic story of Mr. McAfee.
Oh, yes. It just keeps getting more and more bizarre.
It does.
Now, this is perhaps what he needed instead of a body double was a big mustache, a really good costume to cross the border and not have nobody notice him.
Yeah, because I'm pretty certain a North Korean passport is probably the most inconspicuous thing for a non-Oriental bloke
it's
on the run.
It's amazing that there are North Korean passports. But anyway, an interesting story CNN has been doing, and lots of people are talking about this online. One of the new trends for rich Middle Eastern men, the mustache transplant.
No.
Yes, apparently this plastic surgeon flies in from Paris, and he will do 50 to 60 of these procedures a month. And these are mostly from men from the Middle East, and they go to Turkey as medical tourists, and they get mustache transplants because apparently, through the ages, it started in the Ottoman Empire. A really good mustache is sort of, seen as power, and it's just a really good look, he says, as he strokes his beard.
Stop stroking your mustache. All right, it's respectable. Your mustache is respectable.
I'm wondering, though, where are they getting the mustaches from? I mean, are people signing mustache donor cards these days or what?
That's what interested me, too.
Doctors in hospital say, I'm sorry, Mrs. Smith, your husband's died, but we'd like to harvest his mustache.
You would be a powerful man, obviously, in the Middle East with a moustache like yours.
We don't like to talk about that.
Kaz Carter, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Jim.
Where are you today? Wellington?
I'm in Wellington. I just got blown here, actually, I have to say. It's a classic Wellington day.
Is it warm in Wellington, though? Because it's hugely hot in pockets of New Zealand today, and I just haven't checked up on Wellington in the last hour or so.
Yes, it is. I'm being nodded at by producers. It's very warm in Wellington. Yeah, no, it's warm, but it's just been hosing down with rain, and now it's taken over with wind. So it's one of those things, you can't beat Wellington on a bad day either, actually.
Yeah, funny old weather.
Funny old place.
All right, so
have to tell you, it's some follicular unit extraction, which means that they...
Say that again?
They take...
Oh, plucking.
No. They take... groups of hairs are taken from areas of dense growth and they're implanted in the mustache area.
Take the hair out of your ears and put it above your lip.
Isn't the entire of the Middle East an area of dense growth when it comes to hair?
But, you think about it, if you see, shots of lots of airmen standing, they almost all have a mustache. Look at Saddam Hussein. That was a mustache.
Yeah. Much
Jim, your attempt at a mustache earlier a couple of years ago.
It's very cruel of you.
It was a very decent mustache. It just didn't suit your face. So not everybody's suited for a mustache.
Oh,
sorry
that's
about that.
Harsh. I know, on national radio.
I know. She doesn't pull any punches at all.
So, at least you know where you're at. Yes, don't do it again. Don't grow a mustache.
I think Mary was with me on that one.
Yes,
now, well, and yesterday I think Finlay talked about this as well. The Mayan calendar, we all know December 21st is is the date that everyone is talking about, the so-called Mayan apocalypse, the world's supposed to come to an end. Mm. Everybody's got that date circled on their calendar. Yesterday they were talking about the exorbitant fees being paid by people to go to this French town that's supposed to, be okay.
Yes. With,
but you too can get a good deal, apparently, if you don't have the money to go
to this French town.
You can still take part in the joy of the impending end of the world. By General Motors has a dealership in Canada that is doing a big apocalypse, not end of the year sale, but end of the world sale. And if you buy before the end of the year and the world comes to an end,
the car's free.
The car's free.
Oh,
what exactly would you want to buy, though, when the world was going to end?
Well, exactly.
Yeah, no. Hmm. So there's all sorts of people cashing in on this idea, though. If the world ends, you don't pay.
I haven't figured out why this French place, the name of the village I've forgotten, has been singled out as the place
something
to go.
Something about the mountains and the... It's something about the description of the where it is in this valley. It's protected by...
So the but the Mayans never described anything like that. So someone since, some Nostradamus type figure is.
Yeah, well, it's not a very scientific
thing. It's all piffle.
Yeah,
it's total piffle.
Remind me, how many times has the world come to an end in the last century?
Yeah, how many predictions have there been? So anyway.
I have my kids at school constantly mithering me. Is it true? Is it true? I said, keep mithering me. It will come to the end for you.
I mean, we all know it's piffle. Yes, that's right. We all know it's piffle, but it's piffle upon piffle, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
The stories get heaped on top of the
marketers just love these opportunities to say things like, if the world ends, you don't pay. Buy now.
Children are frightened, though. I reckon that...
Well, they talk about it. Obviously, they're talking about it at your school.
Yeah. And my kids have been talking about it. You know, the children aren't immune to it. We may scoff and chortle, but the kids are asking all sorts
true.
Of questions.
Because they hear it on the radio.
Yeah.
When their parents are listening to national radio.
From you, Susan Baldacci.
Tell me. I can't say anything about the end of the world, but I can say something about tsunamis, which I'm sure when you experience one feels like the end of the world. Scientists have actually recreated an entire city in miniature to test the way tsunamis crash on shore, and they found that buildings can actually exacerbate the effect of rushing water. This is an interesting study that's just been presented at a big conference. There are certain areas where water, depending on the shapes of the building, so T-shaped building layouts, narrow alleyways, actually when the water rushes through there, which makes perfect sense, make the water go at a higher speed and can cause further damage, further down the end of that block.
Which explains when you saw those horrific images of the water coming ashore on the Sendai Plain in Japan. I know it seems benign from a distance and it's not, but when it got to those buildings in that town with the more close-up shots, it was absolutely ferocious, wasn't it?
Mm.
So the effect of the water is exacerbated by the buildings.
By buildings, and that makes sense because it's funneling it and that kind of thing. And so T-shaped building layouts, not so good. U-shaped hotels seem to... take the impact a little bit better. And again, that makes a lot of sense. And what these guys are saying is that builders and designers of cities on coasts and things like that need to sort of think about fluid flow the same way that, you think about, the effect of wind on skyscrapers and things like that.
Because I think you said earlier in the day that the water speeds up, actually, in terms of just pure speed, to an enormous degree as it's funneled.
That 80 to 100 times... It can go 80 to 100 times faster once it hits the city and the buildings than it does when it's just on, on the coast.
That's horrific.
When it goes inland and hits all those buildings.
That is amazing.
I know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know about tsunamis, if this village in Holland is going to be subject to that, but this is a really interesting story out of Holland where they have, they're setting up something that they call Scum Village.
Scum Village.
Scum Village. And this is where people who are living in social, municipal housing, this is sort of like government-funded buildings.
Yeah.
If they act up, if they cause any kind of problems, they get removed from that building and sent to the Scum Village, where they're under constant surveillance. These are, they make life very uncomfortable. They're housed in basically big containers. And they basically told if you don't clean up your act, you don't get to go back to the nice public housing project.
This is enlightened social policy, isn't it, from the Dutch? Prison islands are just the next step, aren't they? Wouldn't you say?
I mean, workhouses as well could be along these lines, yeah?
But these, you know, I guess the thing is they're just fed up with antisocial behavior. And they're saying that what often happens is that the nice tenants, the people who are, you know, there and you know, legitimately and trying to obey the rules and be good neighbors and all that kind of thing, are the ones who get driven out by the bad neighbors and the people who cause problems and bring in the drugs and all that kind of thing. So they're saying, we're just going to remove you.
Jim's right. This is how Australia got started.
It's true, actually. Send them to another country.
Yeah, it's a fairly breathtaking solution for 2012 in the West.
How do we say scum village in Dutch?
Don't know about that one.
I wonder who coined the phrase. That's interesting.
The people who are behind this don't like that phrase, but that was it was called that, I think, by some of the...
The scum?
No.
I don't think so.
Well, you know, the right-wing parties think that these special units for persistent troublemakers are a great idea.
Yeah, so, and they've been quite celebrated in Holland. Those
yeah, I think yeah. They called it a village for scum, so everyone's starting to call it scum village.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh, so it's only for blue-collar crime then, so, you know.
Your bankers and financiers don't go there.
You just have to be a banker.
Oh, no, they're altogether higher quality of scum at that point, yes.
Yeah. You know, so they have this tolerance for prostitution and soft drugs, but they just don't like antisocial behavior.
Yeah, interesting.
You draw the line somewhere.
Yeah.
Chilling.
Now, we talk a lot about food that's good for you and food that's not good for you and all of that kind of thing. And somehow, when you're on a diet and you say, I just cannot have that piece of chocolate, you just want that chocolate even more. Well, this is a study that says that is so true. A forbidden piece of chocolate or a cigarette if you're trying to quit smoking, if it's forbidden, the idea of that can make you want it even more. Guilty. A study finds that guilt can make foods taste even better
than they otherwise would. Stop hectoring people. That's the wrong approach, isn't it? Obviously.
Stop making them feel guilty. Yeah. I don't know about that. If the hectoring makes them feel guilty, I don't know.
Well, I think it does, doesn't it? But the guiltier they feel, the better the forbidden fruit tastes.
And the more likely you are to comfort eat.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Exactly.
Feeds into itself.
Yeah, well. That's right.
And before long, you end up in Scum City. What was it called?
You end up in Scum City.
Scum City.
With teenagers smoking. And here's another story. Girls who smoke during their teenage years increase their risk for developing osteoporosis and brittle bone disease as older adults, according to this new study. And this is a really interesting study. And, of course, you can't tell teenagers what you're doing right now is going to wreck your body.
No.
And you're going to feel really bad about it. But this shows that bone mineral density, which you build up in your teen years, girls who smoke don't lay down as much of that bone density that you really need later on in life when they're smoking. So a 19-year-old, the difference in her bone mass density of a 19-year-old smoker versus a non-smoker is basically a whole year's worth of bone density laid down than somebody who doesn't smoke.
That may be a better way of selling the non-smoking idea to teenage women. I would think, actually.
I wonder how they'll try and portray it on the cigarette packet, though. You know, instead of the ghastly-looking organs that they have on the outside, they have, broken bones?
If ghastly-looking organs doesn't do it for you, I'm not sure a hunched-over, you know, somebody who's hunched over at the age of 80, you sort of think, maybe a hunched-over teenager, I don't know.
It's a long way down the track. You're quite right about that.
Well, that's the problem. I think all teenagers feel bulletproof.
Oh, they're invincible.
And the world's going to end anyway, so we don't have to worry about it. You go, yeah. You like. Yeah.
It won't end if you eat tomatoes, apparently.
I like this story. I don't know the details of it, but it sounded good.
Eating tomatoes could apparently help you with depression.
Tomatoes.
He says tomatoes, she says tomatoes.
Who's going to sing?
So people who eat two to six times a week were 40% less likely to suffer from the blues or mild depression compared to people who ate tomatoes less than once a week.
Now, can this be in the form of pizza?
Only in America where they consider pizza.
It could be in the form of sauce on French fries.
There you go. That works for me.
This is a Chinese study, isn't it?
How about Bloody Marys?
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Just covering the bases here.
This is a Chinese study, and they think that it's lycopene, which we all know is in tomatoes and is we already know is very good for us. They're not sure exactly why it is, but they're saying that eating tomatoes could possibly protect against depression.
And they tested other vegetables.
Tested cabbage, tested potatoes. Of course, aren't tomatoes fruit rather than...
But you know what I mean.
Yeah, but they did test
except
other...
in the US, of course.
Yeah.
who came up with the idea, though, to test tomatoes? Like they went, okay, I've had a lot of tomatoes lately and I'm not depressed, so let's research it.
This is research in China and Japan. Mm. Yeah.
Tomato Federation of China.
They are supposed to be amazing, though. Yeah, high alkaline, prevent cancer, all sorts of things, tomatoes. Yeah.
Give it a go.
Eat more.
So tomatoes a couple of times a week?
Tomatoes a couple of times a week. Every day.
Thank you very much, Susan Baldacci. Kaz Carter, Steve McCabe, coming up shortly on the panel after the news, the weather and the mountain forecast today.